This Wednesday will mark 18 years since the September 11th terrorist attacks. Members of the extremist group Al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 people on U.S. soil that day. Weeks after 9/11, the U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan began under President George W. Bush.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes against Al-Qaeda terrorist training camps and military installations of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan.
And in the nearly two decades since, tens of thousands of Afghan civilians and soldiers have been killed in the war. At least 2,300 U.S. soldiers have also died. For the past 10 months, the Trump administration has participated in 9 rounds of negotiations with officials from the Taliban in the hopes of putting an official end to the U.S.-Afghanistan war. But now, those talks have stalled. Over the weekend, the president abruptly called off a meeting at Camp David with Taliban officials and Afghan President Ashraf Ghani, citing a recent attack in Kabul that killed 12 people, including one U.S. soldier. Here's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo explaining that decision to ABC's George Stephanopoulos.
I hope it's the case that the Taliban will change their behavior, will recommit to the things that we've been talking to them about for months. In the end, this will be resolved through a series of conversations. I hope the Taliban will agree to meet with the Afghan government. President Ghani
asked
for that.
They say the jihad's going to continue. They just put out a statement.
Yeah, we'll see. Let me assure you, America's capacity to protect our nation from a terror attack ever emanating from that place again, that effort will continue.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and today on The Takeaway, we're going to examine what's next for U.S.-Taliban negotiations against the backdrop of 18 years of war. Joining me now to discuss is Ali Latifi, a freelance journalist based in Kabul. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Ali.
Thank you.
Also with us is Abdul Qader Sino, a professor of political science at Indiana University. Thank you for being with us, Abdul Qader.
My pleasure.
Ali, let's start with you. Mm-hmm. We saw what the president tweeted out and what Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said on television over the weekend. Beyond that, what do we know about why the Camp David meeting was canceled?
It's kind of hard to tell exactly why the meeting was canceled. It's obviously a Washington-based decision, so it's something that I think people in Washington would have a better sense of. Obviously, if you look at what the president said, he said something about, you know, quote unquote, as he said, great, great soldier being killed, U.S. soldier. But the truth is that in the last couple of weeks, several U.S. soldiers have been killed. And in the 9 rounds of talks, U.S. soldiers have been targeted and killed as well. And more importantly, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of Afghan civilians have been killed in these attacks. And the president really didn't say anything up until now. So the only sort of theory at this point, without knowing the details of what's going on in Washington, is that he had to buckle under pressure because it seemed like both his Republican base and even the Democrats, depending on how much he listens to them, were very much against this vague deal.
Abdul Qader, one of the things that's come under intense scrutiny here is the fact that September 11th is just days away, and the fact that the president wanted to hold these talks at Camp David on that same week is sort of drawing a lot of attention. What's your take on that? Did it make sense for the president to want to do that?
Well, it may be indicative of poor judgment. It also may be meant to show that this is an end of an era where a problem has been dealt with, but that is certainly not true because the Taliban, in fact, did not attack the United States on 9/11. It's Al-Qaeda that did. It's hard to tell, to be honest. I mean, this whole process of negotiation has been quite convoluted. The administration is divided among those who support negotiations and those who don't. The president himself waffles. Also, if you look at President Trump's negotiation tactics, the way he conducts himself in all sorts of negotiations, often it includes breaking the negotiations and threatening never to start them again, and then he would resume later. So it may be all part of a longer series of interactions in his mind that may lead to another invitation, an agreement later, well after 9/11, when the symbolism will not be as relevant.
Now, Abdul Qader, we've heard that the lead U.S. negotiator for Afghanistan said last week that an agreement already had been made with the Taliban, at least in principle. Do we know anything about the terms of that deal?
Oh, yes. There are two areas. Basically, the Taliban have agreed not to host Al-Qaeda or other anti-U.S. organizations on their territories in Afghanistan. And the United States basically agreed to withdraw from Afghanistan. This much has been agreed upon. Now, what remains are other issues, such as the Taliban forming a government together with the current government in a coalition or a common regime, whether the Taliban would allow or support the elections, whether the current government would release Taliban prisoners, and whether there would be a ceasefire. Now, those issues, in general, there is something of a meeting of the minds between the administration and the Taliban. However, the government in Kabul does not agree to what the United States wants to commit to in its own name on those issues.
What impact do you think this is going to have on U.S.-Taliban negotiations from here, Abdul Qadir?
They will resume. I have no doubt in my mind that those negotiations will resume for the simple fact that the Trump administration and any other administration that will come later have no reason not to resume them. Otherwise, the alternative is just to muddle through in Afghanistan, and they've been doing, the United States has been doing that for the last 18 years to no effect whatsoever. And so for things to change, they have to talk to the Taliban and they have to reach an agreement. And as far as the Taliban are concerned, they're getting everything they want at almost no concession.
Ali, the Afghan president, Ashraf Ghani, has been sidelined largely during these U.S.-Taliban negotiations, and yet he was supposed to be at the Camp David meeting, which was, of course, canceled abruptly. What has been his role in these negotiations, if any?
He has no role. That's one of the major problems, is that the president and his administration and the Afghan people in general have no role whatsoever in these discussions. For instance, one of the concession points is this claim that the Taliban won't host Al-Qaeda or any other foreign group again. They haven't done that in 18 years, and they can't do that in the future. So they're really not giving up anything in this, right? They're getting the U.S. to withdraw, and they'll get whatever political terms they want, but they gave up nothing in this. And in the meantime, the actual administration of Afghanistan has not been involved in this at all, nor is any women, nor any youth, nor any different like ethnic minorities or any ethnic groups, literally any other Afghan other than the Taliban involved in these discussions. And that's a major, major issue for people.
Abdul Qadir, when we look at, we talked a little bit about Trump's approach, President Trump's approach in negotiating, generally speaking, but when we look at his administration's strategy with dealing with the Taliban, how does it compare, in your opinion, to George W. Bush and Barack Obama's approaches?
It is very different. Basically, George W. Bush wanted to invade Afghanistan, defeat the Taliban, and then did not invest much in Afghanistan, which led to the current quagmire. He had a window for a few years to rebuild a good government in Afghanistan, to help Afghans rebuild a good government in Afghanistan. He failed to do it because he didn't care to invest the resources. It was a cynical occupation. For President Obama, he was handed an Afghanistan that was corrupt, that was a government that was ineffective, and he decided to have a surge, pour resources, give it all the United States had to make it work. $1 trillion was spent on Afghanistan in terms of military expenditures and in building institutions, etc. And his administration failed. And so basically when Trump came, as part of his campaign commitment was to withdraw from Afghanistan, disengage from Afghanistan, which seemed to be a losing war. So he had to find a way to do so. But before disengaging, he wanted to have a card he could play, so he increased the number of troops by about 5,000 to 14,000, you know, so he could have more leverage in the negotiations. And those would be the first ones to leave Afghanistan later in that multi-step withdrawal.
Earlier this year, Abdul Qadir, you wrote that if a U.S.-Taliban agreement is reached, it would mark a major turning point in U.S. foreign policy in the Muslim world. Explain what that means, please.
Well, look at it this way. In theory, the United States is in Afghanistan to help the regime it established after invading the country in late 2001, establish itself, create democracy, etc. Quite a few Afghans put their lot, their future, their fortune with the United States. They bet on that alliance and on the words of three different U.S. administrations. Now, if the United States leaves and the Taliban, you really like it to have a civil war in Afghanistan. And the Taliban, sooner or later, will probably occupy big chunks of Afghanistan, quite possibly including the capital, Kabul, if not the whole country, as they almost did in 2001. And those people will be, the allies of the United States, would be paying a major, major price for their alliance with the United States. Now, imagine you are a leader in Somalia, in Syria, or in Iraq, allied with the United States. Then you will have to reconsider, otherwise you'll be foolish, working with the United States. Because if they abandon their Afghan allies, they could abandon the Kurds. They could abandon the government of in Mogadishu, in Somalia, etc. And so there will be less readiness to ally with the United States, less trust in the United States, and therefore every U.S. venture, every U.S. involvement in the Middle East, North Africa, and beyond, you know, will be much more difficult.
Ali, I want to bring you in on that point because I'm curious to know what civilians in Afghanistan, whether or not they feel, if there is not a deal reached, that what Abdul Qadir is predicting could in fact happen, that there could be even more instability.
Fear. That's the exact fear. But the truth is that, you know, every Afghan knows that a deal has to be reached, that a peace has to come. Really, the only people that think that, you know, a military victory is still possible is the government and its allies. And so, you know, there's massive insecurity and corruption and different issues, not to mention this idea of the Taliban and Daesh. So the truth is that, you know, a peace has to come. People want a peace to come. But it's a question of what kind of a peace. Is it like a legitimate peace that actually includes, because that's the other thing. If let's say they include the Afghan government. If it only includes the Afghan government, the Taliban, and the United States, it's still not properly representative of 32 million people in the country.
Abdul Qadir, we mentioned at the top of the segment, we're nearing 18 years since the September 11th terrorist attacks that were carried out by Al-Qaeda and the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. What have been the personal and financial costs of the war for both the United States and Afghanistan?
Well, let's start with Afghanistan. Tens of thousands of Afghan civilians have died. And in fact, it's really hard to count the casualties. So I wouldn't be surprised if the number was closer to 100,000 or more. And so the suffering has been tremendous in Afghanistan. And the casualties were from both sides. And, you know, the United States is not blameless in this at all. On the other hand, some groups in Afghanistan, members of some groups, have benefited from the Western presence, have made advancements, especially the Hazara minority, members of the Hazara minority and other minorities, while in the South, they have incurred the most damage. As for the United States, the cost has been $1 trillion in treasury in a time when the United States debt is ballooning out of control at $22 trillion, perhaps out of control, but it's becoming really large, and about 5,000 U.S. soldiers and contractors have been killed fighting in Afghanistan. Those are not trivial numbers. However, they're not destructive for the United States. But Afghanistan is at a point where it will probably have to start from scratch again. Its economy is not doing great at all. Its government will probably collapse at some point in the future, will have to be rebuilt on completely different bases. And so it will be starting from scratch again.
Abdul Qadir Sinan is a professor of political science at Indiana University, and Ali Latifi is a freelance journalist based in Kabul. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.